Coming up on KUCB News, Unalaska's utility rates are about to go before the City Council, and Alaska's looking to the Ivy League for help fighting its reliance on diesel. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Tuesday, March 14th, 2017. After months of debate, the Unalaska City Council is finally ready to set new utility rates. At a meeting tonight, councilors will vote on a resolution that would raise the cost of wastewater by 15% over the next 4 years. They're also considering an application from the airport restaurant to renew its liquor license. The City Council meets tonight at 6 o'clock at City Hall. Captain's Bay Road has reopened after an accident last night closed the road for almost 5 hours. A commercial vehicle rolled over around 7 o'clock near the Crowley Dock, according to an alert from the Unalaska Department of Public Safety. DPS officials didn't immediately return calls for comment, so it's unclear what caused the rollover or whether anyone was injured. Responders opened the two-lane road for traffic around 11:30 last night, cautioning drivers to watch for road crews and heavy cranes as they continued to clear the accident. In rural Alaska, lots of people are desperate to stop shelling out money to power their communities on diesel. And while they're open to alternative energy, most don't have the funding to even explore that idea. Help could come in the form of graduate students from Harvard University who have been tasked with the assignment of solving some of Alaska's fossil fuel woes. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Zoe Sobel has the story.
Harvard Law student Mike Maruka may sound like he's describing a spring break trip.
We also got to drive out to Seward and went skiing at Alyeska. And we managed to catch the Northern Lights last night.
We did.
Sort of. They were not very clear.
But he's actually in Alaska for a class that's looking for practical solutions to reduce the use of fossil fuels, especially in low-income, underserved communities. With Alaska in a multi-billion dollar hole, state funding, including a lot of grant money, has been slashed. Maruka thinks it's time for Alaskan communities to start looking for funding outside the state.
Private money, such as from a large company or from a university, might be able to, in some cases, step in to where public funds used to support such projects.
The team's goal is writing a proposal to reduce 50,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide a year. The value of that reduction measured in carbon credits could be sold to private companies looking to offset their own carbon footprints.
The innovation is here. All that we are looking into is a way that an outside player who might want to capitalize on carbon offsets might be able to fill a gap or make something happen that wouldn't otherwise occur.
By the way, Maruka says 50,000 tons of CO2 is the average total emissions for a community of 20 to 25,000 people for a year. But most communities in Alaska aren't that big, which Caroline Lauer, a student studying urban planning, says is one of the biggest challenges for the team.
The high benchmark has really forced us to be creative and figuring out how can we package a bunch of different innovative options together to maybe get as close to 50,000 as possible.
The team didn't have the chance to visit rural Alaska, but they were in Anchorage this month meeting with energy experts from across the state. One of those experts is Christopher Emmerich, the city administrator and clerk for the Aleutian community of False Pass. And he's totally on board with this project.
Oh, I think it's fantastic. Yeah, sounds like a wonderful idea.
False Pass is a 73-person community that runs on diesel, which is expensive. Emmerich says the city spends around $200,000 a year on it.
Cost of energy is paramount with these small communities for surviving into the future, especially as funding is getting cut. If they got to keep paying like we do a quarter of a budget for diesel, that's not sustainable.
Since 2012, False Pass has been looking into tidal power, which would allow the community to be less reliant on diesel and more self-sufficient. But it comes with a hefty price tag, around $7 million, and the community can't foot the bill alone. Right now, the Harvard students are just working for course credit. They don't have any real funds to invest in rural Alaska. But that doesn't faze Emmerich. He's doing everything he can to make sure False Pass's energy projects are as ready as possible, just in case any outside financing comes along. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Unalaska.
The finish line under the Burled Arch is in sight for top Iditarod mushers. Since reaching the Bering Sea coast, teams have slashed their rest time, surging across the sea ice of Norton Sound and the hills of the Seward Peninsula. As KNOM's Ben Matheson reports, the frontrunner is firmly in the driver's seat, but there's still some racing to be had.
Two-time champion Mitch Seavey is 77 miles away from his third title. Church bells made it official as he pulled into White Mountain shortly before midnight. Seavey arrived with a nearly two-hour advantage over the next team in, his son Dallas Seavey. All racers must complete the final 8 hours of rest here before pulling the snowhook and heading overland past the Topcock Hills to Safety Sound and on to the finish line. After coming off the Yukon River, Seavey has tailored his schedule to set his team up to post the fastest run times, and critically, to protect the linchpin of his success, reliable, unassailable speed along the coast.
You can either build this huge lead, or you can build rest into the team, which means you're pretty much invincible. If you're faster, and you have position, and you have more rest, that's kind of checkmate.
He's rested his 12 dogs several times since Unalakleet, including in the checkpoints of Shaktuluk, Koyuk, and Elam. The Seward musher says this generous rest is what he wants more so than any gap in front of his chasers.
As much as I can get away with and still have a comfortable lead, pretty much, I would rest them more if I had more time. There's no sense in, you only have to win by a minute, I guess.
If he preserves at least that minute, Seavey would become a three-time Iditarod champion on Tuesday.
Been a long span of time, though. It takes me a long time to win three. And obviously it's not in the bag, we got to do some things right, and there's plenty of ways to mess it up, so I'm not planning on doing any of those, but bad luck, things can happen, it's not for sure, but yeah, obviously we're in the best position.
Two records could be eclipsed with a Seavey victory, the overall race speed record set last year by his son Dallas at 8 days, 11 hours, and 20 minutes. Mitch Seavey could also become the oldest musher to win the race at 57 years old, this time breaking the record that he set in 2013 as a 53-year-old winner. Nicholas Petit and Dallas Seavey are battling for second place, as well as to be positioned to take advantage of any mistake that Mitch Seavey makes on the run into Nome. Petit pushed from Shaktuluk north and across the sea ice to Koyuk in a big run, ultimately finding his team within 13 minutes of Dallas Seavey after they leapfrog one another and arrived in White Mountain. The younger Seavey is now thinking more about the young racers near him than his father. That's a mental shift that happened around Unalakleet.
And had I made that adjustment earlier, or had I never tried to race my dad, I would have been in a much better position here, I think. Because I did have to push a little bit hard, took a little bit of speed off him, so then I had to give some extra rest back to get that speed back.
Norwegian Jor Olsom lurks behind the top three, while Jesse Royer and Wade Mars battled Monday for the fifth position. Still running with a full string of 16 dogs, Royer said in Koyuk that pressure is coming from all sides.
I don't know what kind of shape their teams are in. They're going to keep pushing to try to stay in front of me, and I'm going to keep pushing to try to catch them.
For KNOM News, I'm Ben Matheson in White Mountain.
Race leader Mitch Seavey left White Mountain just after 7:30 this morning with 12 dogs on the line. That's a solid two-hour lead over the mushers chasing him toward the Safety Sound Roadhouse. That'll be the final checkpoint before the finish line in Nome, meaning Iditarod 45 should name its champion sometime this afternoon or evening. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.